हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. Is that in the mana? Topic 13, the laws concerning women. Thus, the rules for personal purification from men of all castes and those for cleaning inanimate things have been fully declared to you. Hear now the duties of women. Right? So, in other words, those things that are general rules, those are common for everyone. So this means it's specifically for the women. Because otherwise they would also, because when it says men, it means human beings, like that. So then this when it says here, laws concerning women, that means specifically for the women. By a girl, by a young woman, or even by an aged one, nothing must be done independently, even in her own house. In childhood, a female must be subject to her father, in youth to her husband, and when her lord is dead, to her sons. A woman must never be independent. Riti, Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 9.14.38, because women are easily seduced, the Manusmita enjoins they should not be given freedom. A woman must always be protected, either by her father, by her husband, or by her elder son. If women are given freedom to mingle with men like equals, which they now claim to be, they cannot keep their propriety. The nature of a woman, as personally described by Urvasi, is to establish false friendship with someone and then seek new male companions, one after another, even if this means giving up the company of a sincere well-wisher. She must not seek to separate herself from her father, husband, or sons. By leaving them, she would make both her own and her husband's families contemptible. She must always be cheerful, clever in the management of her household affairs, careful in cleaning her utensils, and economical in expenditure. As we mentioned, somebody from Brahmin family was saying that when they were arranging marriages in their families. So if there was a prospective family, they would go to their house. So then, you know, the men will mingle with the men, the women will go mingle with the women. So while the women go into the kitchen, all they do is take the spoon and turn it over and look at the back. Because it's the place where the handle meets the head of the spoon. So it's a little bit hard to clean there. And if it's clean there, then you know that they're a family on the same standard as you in cleanliness. If it's not, then they're pleasant and nice, and then they never come back. Right? Like that. So that's for careful in cleaning your utensils. Economical in expenditure. In other words, what can be bought cheaply at a certain time is bought at that time. You know, we'll get into these details later when we get to Vatsyayana. So therefore, it's like if there's a season when something is available that you would store, so you buy it at that time. Let's say like cumin seeds, there's a season. So then you buy, you know, your cumin seeds for that time and store it. So they'll always be looking for where there's a, you know, a place where you can get good quality things for less. Right? So that's the standard, like that. Clever means, you know, that she can put everything together very nicely. Cheerful is the presentation. Like that. Yeah. Him to whom her father may give her, or her brother with the father's permission, she shall obey as long as he lives, and when he is dead, she must not insult his memory. For the sake of procuring good fortune to brides, the recitation of benedictory text, Svastyayana, and the sacrifice of the Lord of creatures, Prajapati, are used at weddings. But the betrothal by the father or guardian is the cause of the husband's dominion over his wife. Right? So when the father betroths the daughter to somebody, that's the reason that he has dominion, he uses here, over his wife. So at that point, that's when it's been shifted, right? Because sometimes, even just a couple of weeks ago, I was hearing how one father was saying that his daughter is married to a devotee, but he's claiming that he's the senior person and would be the control of the husband because the husband's parents aren't devotees. Right? So therefore, he by default becomes the... And therefore, the husband has to do what he says. But because, and that's because the husband's connected to his daughter. But here it says the dominion over his wife is at betrothal. Not even at marriage, at betrothal. Like that. So she stays at the house, at the father's house. But that's the cause of it. So the point is once the girl is given, then the father, he's not the one who's in control of the girl. The husband is.
And if there are some problems, for example?
Problems means what kind of problems?
Contemporary stuff. And then a father can interfere, let's
say. What do you mean by interfere? I mean, what I'm saying? It's a very, very...
It's not something specific. That's the general question.
There must be some specific point that would give...
I'm thinking about my daughter. It's okay. in the future, if the husband doesn't treat her nice, something happens, that's...
But the thing is, that's why you're supposed to be very careful who you marry them to.
Kali Yuga. Things change. People change.
And you don't change. You're always like a rock.
Let me remind myself now. It's okay. What about my daughter?
Yeah. No, but the point is now. But if you analyze the question that comes up from that father, where I'm giving here, if we bring out, because that was a generic presentation. If I get into more detail, that was the only child. So the daughter was the only child. So there's no son. So now, after the girl got married, after the marriage and everything was fine, after she got married, then the girl's mother actually understood what it was, that there's no children around and there's no son and everything like that. So she couldn't handle not being in control of her daughter, right? But, who's going to present it like that, right? And so therefore, she puts pressure on the husband. And the husband's not going to say, well, because of my wife, because otherwise then he's in trouble. So he will make it look like it's him as the concerned father. But all it is that the girl's family can't handle being away from the daughter. It has nothing to do with actually religious principles or anything else. It's just simply their own attachment. Does that make sense? So one also has to consider that in the mix. Because, like that. I mean, it'll come up. I'm not even sure if it's in here. I think it'll come later. Then Manu mentions that better a girl dwells her whole life with her father and never gets married and leaves the house than marry someone who's not worth marrying. Right? So then that principle is there. So the idea is that it's Kali Yuga. So one is you don't know what happens, but two, it's also Kali Yuga. We don't go to the degree that we should. We decide, oh, we like the person, and that's good enough. We don't check the charts. We don't know what is the commonality of nature. We don't know what is the weaknesses. Right, because there's some place it's a weakness. The point is because of their attachment, something is always made bigger out of it than what it actually is. We're saying most of the time the fights between a husband and wife is over small things. When they file irreconcilable differences, it's over something like he goes to the refrigerator, takes out the milk, puts it in his coffee, leaves it on the counter. And it's just driving her nuts that he does it every day. You know, that's actually the reason they're getting divorced. You know? These are irreconcilable. She can't train him the way she wants, so it's irreconcilable. You understand? So what everyone's fighting over is small things. It's not big things. So the point is it's a matter of training, of character, of understanding this and trying to work with that. Otherwise, because of emotions, we tend to move in a way that's not necessarily beneficial. Right? It'll deal with the particular emotion we're in, but it doesn't necessarily deal with the actual situation. Right? So that's why one is very... That's why we saw in the beginning a lot of effort is put into choosing the right partner. Like that. So that one avoids such problems. But it does say that the Vedic thing, if it doesn't won't work at home, then she can work at her house with the husband. She can always go back to her father's house and just stay there. Right? But it doesn't mean they're divorced. It just means they're separated. You know. Does that work? That general enough?
She's a little poor, so it's
okay. Okay. So next year the question will be a little bit more serious. Okay. Yes.
What happens if the father is not a good father?
Then if she's intelligent, she finds other, you know, male role models to follow. She's not... Either not in control of those kind of things, then unfortunately she'll have a problem with authority. And when you have a problem with authority, then she'll basically means any masculine position. So she'll have a problem with teachers, she'll have a problem with husbands, she'll have a problem with, you know, anything that's in the position of authority. So materially it's not very good. Problem is it also bleeds over spiritually, so then there may be problems with guru, maybe problems with Krishna. Is they all somehow or another in that masculine position. You know, that's why it said that in when you're dealing with all those different relatives, then it's the utmost kindness in dealing with the daughter. That's for the father. Right? The mother is the disciplinarian of the daughter. The father's the disciplinarian of the son. Right? The mother's kind to the son, father's more strict. Right? And the other way around. Father's kind to the daughter, mother's more strict with the daughter. Does that make any sense? So, you know, that's how it's supposed to work. In other words, there's principles at work here, and if it doesn't work in its natural form, then you have to have other aspects that make it work. Because right? All these different things, it just means how the girl functions. Because being feminine, being dependent by nature, then there must be some kind of stable element, right? The point is that the girl is always the changing variety, the inconsistency, that's the attractive feature. But it's only attractive if some portion of that is connected to something stable. Does that make sense? Like a flag fluttering in the wind. Everybody likes it, it's always good. Right? But why? So the attractiveness is it's fluttering. But how is it able to flutter?
And it's connected to
because it's connected to the pole. Right? If it wasn't connected to the flagpole, it wouldn't flutter. It'd be sitting on the ground or flying off in the if you see a flag flying off in the wind, no one goes, "Oh, look, so nice. Isn't that attractive?" No, it doesn't. It's the combination of the inconsistent with the consistent, the always changing with the steadiness. That's the combination. Does that make sense? So therefore, if there's nothing steady in one's own house, there's other relatives or family friends or something. You have to find something that's stable. Does that make sense? But the difficulty, as is pointed out here, the tendency is always to turn that into something conjugal. So one has to see that one, if unless it is conjugal, means the husband, that it remains in whatever the relationship naturally is.
So So if the woman or the girl takes shelter of the spirit of the guru,
yeah,
then is there the danger that she sees him as her father?
It means that it's not a danger that she sees him as a father, because the spiritual master is father. That's fair. The problem is all of her emotional needs she'll want to get from him. And he won't provide that. And if he doesn't provide that, then he'll just be, in her mind, another example of, you know, a flaky male who doesn't actually do his duties. Rather than he's someone who's supposed to give spiritual direction. If you can do it, nice, but it has to be kept on the spiritual platform. But that means then all the material, emotional, and all those things, that's not where you're turning there. You're making the basis the spiritual. So rasa is still there, but it's just looked at from the spiritual. It could be done, you know, but more, probably even better would be Krishna. You know, the Krishna is the, you know, the stable element. Right? Because then you can tell him anything, you can do anything, and like that. Does that make sense? So, can be done. But it's just, the point is there's a principle here, the principle must be seen. Does that make sense? Right? So now, one may say, well, this is just dealing with the women and this and that, what about the men? But it's not about, not in this case, about men and women. It means it is on that the social element, but ultimately it's the same principle as the soul, because the soul's feminine. Because it means unless we're careful, we'll connect ourselves with this, you know, spiritual authority, and then if we like things, great, but if not, then we'll change to another one, and change to another one, and change to another one. Right? Does that make sense? People do it all the time. You know what I'm saying? So that's the same principle. You know, the spiritual master goes, you stick with him, not that now you run off with another one. You know what I'm saying? You know, Prabhupada leaves and there's so many, you know, people, you know, trundle off, you know, catch the boat, cross the river. You know, or that, or, you know, somebody else, then they die or leave, and then they're off to the next one, and off to the next one. It's fun to watch. But it has absolutely nothing to do with social or spiritual life. So it's the same principle. So all these principles are the same. It's just that it's more intensely applied in the feminine form. Because then, does that make sense? Because then you're getting feminine. Right? Does that make sense? The feminine nature in the feminine expression. Does that make sense? Like the cowherd boys, they're feminine, but it's in a masculine expression. So they're still dependent on Krishna and connect to Krishna. So socially it interacts as men, but they're still dependent upon Krishna. The Krishna is independent. Does that make sense?
As compared to the gopis who are feminine and feminine, so the interaction with Krishna has to be a little bit more violent.
Yeah, like that. Yeah.
If we take the spiritual master, if he leaves, then he takes shelter somebody else.
Means you can take shelter to inspire to follow the instructions of the spiritual master.
Yeah, because you feel immature to go and be yourself or something.
But even anyway, you take shelter of other friends, other devotees anyway.
No, but if this relationship becomes kind of prominent, like still guru disciple, but in the light of diction, let's say.
Means it's just like this: if the father dies and the uncle is there, then you may take shelter and he may be like a father figure, but it's not that your connection with the family is still your father, right? Though everybody knows this one's the person, the prominent one in applying it, you know what I'm saying?
So it's not a betrayal or something. It's natural if you take shelter of somebody else.
Yeah, it's natural. But it has to be seen that it's not that the spiritual master thinks aren't functioning. Does that make sense? You know. So it's just these subtleties are what's important. The husband who wedded her with sacred texts always gives happiness to his wife, both in season and out of season, in this world and in the next. So, oh, here they are. Who took my rocks? Going back a few chapters. In season means when she can have a child.
Oh.
And out of season when she's not going to have a child. So that means in all aspects he's taking care of his wife. You know, so any to do with any aspect of her life, then the husband has to be to see to that. So then this also here gives happiness in season, out of season, in this world and the next. So anything to do with material, spiritual, and within material, anything to do with whatever it is, physical, emotional, intellectual, you know, in the way of things, in the way of facilities, in the way of how you say, security, all these, it's a complete package. It's not just only this or that. Like one husband was saying, he studied all the scriptures and looked everywhere and never seen anywhere where it says that the husband has to take care of the emotional needs of the wife. Right? I'm not sure what scriptures he was reading, but in any case, you know, he was very convinced of this. You know, so then that's not following this out of season. You know, so it means all the different aspects that are there. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point. You know, so it means he. So he always gives happiness means he has to make the endeavor that she becomes happy. You know, it's not that it's the fact he gives happiness, so therefore he doesn't have to do anything, and therefore she just has to be happy. Because in that previous point where it says that always cheerful, she must be must always be cheerful. Why will she be cheerful? Because the husband deals properly. That's why she's cheerful. If the husband doesn't deal properly, she's not cheerful. Right? So in other words, she's endeavoring herself to be cheerful, but the husband also has to be endeavoring to make her cheerful. Because without his support, she can't be cheerful. Does that make sense? But at the same time, she has to make the endeavor also. Because you know, it's a lot of trouble to be cheerful. It's a lot of energy. Women are high energy, so to be cheerful means it's using a lot of energy. So there has to be a lot of input. So that a lot, you know, does that make sense? How much you put the battery in the charger is how much you can get out. You know, that's. Does that work?
Yeah.
The operative word being work.
Yeah, that's why Jewish, you know, people say that the best religion is to be happy.
Yeah. Well, that means only if you're following religion can you be happy.
Yeah, that's what they mean.
Yeah. Now, anything, if you go into any old culture, then there's all kinds of very good wisdom that has been, you know, observed and practiced over the ages. Problem is they only get up to that level of piety, they can't connect it to the Lord. That's where the weakness is. But all those things are very good, but unfortunately youth never find those things of any value. So then, you know, very easily these things get lost. But otherwise, there's so much to learn from those who have age. That's why I said before is that the man who always listens to those who, you know, who are older, who have experience, then he'll always be successful. You know, he makes his own decisions and applies it. But if he understands, he listens to what they say, then you know things will work out. Because always the principle is, yeah, when I was your age, I thought like that too. And then when you get older, then you find out that, yeah.
But we see, Marie, that older people now, they're not so pious. So if you dare to listen to them, maybe practical things, you will be successful otherwise.
Yeah, so I mean, so whatever is useful, take what's useful, leave the rest, you know. Point is, it's not that when you walk into the mountains, there's just these huge monster, you know, like truckload size pieces of gold and all that. No, there's some little flecks of dust in all this other stuff. So the point is take the gold, leave the rest. It's always. Does that make sense? Though destitute of virtue, or seeking pleasure elsewhere, or devoid of good qualities, yet a husband must be constantly respected by a faithful wife. Right? So this is that principle that goes back with what Radharani is talking about in the 8th verse of the Shikshastaka. It's just the, doesn't matter what happens, because how we interpret it. Right? Because ultimately it goes back, the masculine principle goes back to Krishna. However we interpret it, we'll say it's good or bad or other things like that. Maybe good or bad. But the principle is that that connection is always there. Because the point is it may not be ideal for the short term, but it will always be ideal for the long term. Like that. No sacrifice, no vow, no fast must be performed by women apart from their husbands. It means it's not that they have to do it together. It means it's you know, done with that. You know, there's an understanding there. If a wife obeys her husband, she will for that reason alone be exalted in heaven. Right? Even if he's not, she will be. Just by doing that. If she does everything properly, whatever the rules of the house follows them, she'll go to the heavenly planets.
There's no vow, no fast in our movement. We all do our own vows, kind of, some general, and like you decide you do some extra party for.
What happens if you decide to, you know, you're going to do a nirjal fast on Janmashtami? Okay, halfway through the day you collapse, but you're determined to do it. But you have some service to do. The service is not going to happen, but you're determined to follow it. So the husband says, "Better you drink some water and do your service." Right? That's what it means. Like that.
It's funny, but it happened actually.
Yes. Okay. Okay, yeah, it's funny because she's going, okay, and he's going. Okay. Okay. Yeah. But that's what it means. It's just, in other words, there's an understanding there of what they're doing in that. They have standards in the family, so they basically, there's a certain amount that they, how much they're sacrificing, how, what are their vows, what are their fasting, what are their, you know, their sadhana, and that. And so then if the husband sees that there's something in what the wife's doing is going to throw something off, then he says something. Because the point is even if he's wrong by the wife following what she says, you know, then she gets benefit anyway. Because if there is something wrong, the karma goes to the husband, not to the wife. That's why she listens to him, because he gets the karma. Right? The student listens to the teacher, because the teacher gets the karma. Right? You know, so it's like that. So it works out. It works out. Okay. Because the same principle is there, as we said, is that one always obeys the spiritual master, one obeys Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then one will be elevated, whether anybody else is elevated or not. A faithful wife who desires to dwell with her husband must never do anything that might displease him who took her hand, whether he be alive or dead. The statement who desires to dwell means both in this life and after death. At her pleasure, so this is also using the language that it can mean that they'll go to the heavenly planets together or they'll go back to Godhead and all that. It doesn't mean in the heavenly planets, then there may be some connection there. Or Vaikuntha also, it appears that one can go back to God as husband and wife and remain that way. But in Goloka, it doesn't specifically work that way. Because in Vaikuntha, it's all servitorship. So everyone's got the same rasa with the Lord. So therefore, whether you're male or female doesn't matter. You both have something to do. Like that. And everybody's married in Vaikuntha. Like that. They all have husbands and wives. So. You seem to be shocked with that.
Narad Muni, isn't he in Vaikuntha?
Yeah, but he's Narad Muni. There are individuals, but the general residents, you see that he's talking about. They're flying around in their airplanes with their wives and talking about the Lord and everything like that. So you have individuals, Narad Muni, or, you know, Hanuman's not married, or, you know, You do have individuals. You have a whole group there in Vaikuntha. They're all Kanaras and Kimpurushas. So they all have, you know, all kinds of, you know, horse heads and this kind of, you know, the part of that stuff. I'm sure someone else with a horse head, and also you might get married. But. I'm not sure they didn't use that line. I'm just thinking, is that, you know, the ones with fox heads, and the guy could say about his wife, she's really foxy, you know, stuff like that. But I don't think they used that one. Okay, so it can mean for those who are karmakandis, who want to go to the heavenly planets, or it can mean Vaikuntha element. Or the whole point here just means going back to Godhead, because a husband and wife may be in different rasas or in the same rasa, but it's not necessarily going to be married, because especially in Vrindavan, it's not so much that the husbands and wives are the important element of the relationship with Krishna. So they're generally arranged by the internal potency. At her pleasure, let her emaciate her body by living on pure flowers, roots, and fruits, but she must never even mention the name of another man after her husband has died. Till death, let her be patient of hardship, self-controlled, and chaste, and strive to fulfill that most excellent duty which is prescribed for wives who have one husband only. Many thousands of Brahmins who were chaste from the youth have gone to heaven without continuing their race. A virtuous wife who, after death of her husband, constantly remains chaste, reaches heaven, though she has no son, just like those chaste men. Right? Because otherwise it may be husband died, they have no son, so therefore how will the karmakanda rites go on? Like that. So that may be the thing. So then, therefore, she may approach another man to have a son. But then the point is it's not necessary, because the brahmacharis are going to the heavenly planets without having sons, because they don't even get married. So therefore, just by being a chaste wife, that will elevate her to the heavenly planets. It's nothing to do with having son. But having the son is more important for the man. Mm. It's not as important for the woman. It means as far as getting elevated. It means if she's chaste, he does all the ashrameda yagyas, this, that, blah, everything. Then if she's chaste, whatever he gets, she'll get. Right? Even if she's not really a devotee, if she's attached to her husband, who is a devotee, and he goes back to Godhead, she'll go back to Godhead. Right? But all this just works one way.
It's reverse, doesn't it?
No, that's why you should get out black cards and equality here, you know. The women get the better deal, right? The men get all the karma, you know. The women get automatically half the benefit, like that. But the benefit that the wife gets, the husband doesn't get. He gets protected. If her chastity, it'll protect him.
Right. Interesting, Raj. If she gets to heaven, or not to heaven, to Vaikuntha, for example, we usually hear that you have to be trained at least, you know, to behave not even in Vaikuntha, but say in the spiritual world. You have to get a special mentality and.
Yeah, but that's what Gokul's for.
Oh, so she will get the training there. Even if she's not a devotee and she gets there.
Yeah.
Just by being chaste.
Yeah, and then you get trained. Everybody has to get trained. Hope we're not opening up too many things here. It's going to be this look on the face. Dazed look. But a woman who, from a desire to have offspring, violates her duty towards her deceased husband, brings on herself disgrace in this world and loses her place with her husband. Like, so whatever he would attain, she won't attain that. But even if she's thinking she wants offspring for the benefit of the husband, but it's still, she loses her place. Offspring begotten by another man is here not considered lawful, nor does offspring begotten on another man's wife belong to the begetter. Nor is a second husband anywhere prescribed for virtuous women. Right? So, offspring gotten by another man is not correct, and or on another man's wife. Means there's a whole... doesn't get into that here. That'll be later when we get inheritance. Is that who owns the field is who has the right over the production from the field. Right? Means if I go into another man's field and plant crops, I can't claim the crops as my own. They're his crops because it's his land. You can say it's my seed, but so what? It's his land. Because it's because of the land that the seed grew. So in the same way, if one man has a child with another man's wife, the child belongs to the other man. You know, or if someone has a child with a girl before she's married, whoever she marries, that child is whoever she marries. It has nothing to do with who's from. It's the way it goes. That's why Manu says, don't waste your time, because then you lose. You don't. It's not. Like that. Parasara states, a married woman may take a second husband under any of the five following emergencies. Exigencies. Namely, if her first husband long remains unheard of, or dies or takes to asceticism or loses his virile power or becomes a degraded person. Right? So then there are these considerations. But generally, let me see if it has more here.
Before that, it's second if he's without virtue and all that, she should follow you.
That's the main principle. If she follows that, she will get lots of benefit.
But she still can.
Under these, because Parasara is specifically talking about in Kali Yuga. Mm-hmm. But the only problem is defining these. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that's where the problem comes up. Okay, you should have more. A widow who partakes of a brahmacharya after the demise of her lords goes to heaven after death, like brahmacharis. Right? So that means if the widow, she becomes a brahmachari, means doesn't marry someone else, doesn't that, then she'll go to heaven like brahmacharis. So brahmacharis, just by being brahmachari, can actually go to brahmaloka. Just like that. If they remain a brahmachari their whole life, do nothing else, they'll go to brahmaloka. So then the same should get. So it's considered the most powerful. So even though he's saying this, still, that's better. Like that. She who cohabitates with a man of higher caste, forsaking her own husband, who belongs to a lower one, will become contemptible in this world and is called a remarried woman, Parapurva. Because the duties for a remarried woman are different than a first married woman. Like that. Unfortunately, most remarried women absolutely cannot tolerate following the duties of a remarried woman. That's been my experience. Does that make sense? That comes back. Remarried woman means... So remarried woman generally means she's older. And so when she remarries, then generally speaking, she's coming into an already existing household. Right? So that means her husband, good chance he already has children. Mm-hmm. Right? So that means he has children, he has, what do you call it? He has children, he already has friends, he already has activities he does, he already has a lifestyle that was made before she came along. So her coming along means she can't change that. She could, you know, refine it or domesticate it, but she can't change it. Right? So she doesn't have that same, she doesn't have that proprietorship over the whole field like the first married woman does. Because the first married woman is just the boy and girl. They have nothing. They don't have their common friends, their activities, their children, anything. So therefore, they generate all that together. So she has proprietorship over all that. So therefore the control. But when she comes in afterwards, already children are there, they already have their thing, then she is in privacy with her husband, she has those same rights that any woman has over her husband. But when she's not in private with him, and she's dealing with the family or extended, you know, whatever the family environment, she just has to deal as part of that. She's not in control of it. If she naturally develops control of it because of affection, that's fine. But she can't claim any control like that. But the problem is because it didn't work out the first time, then they try to do the same thing with the second, with the third, and it'll never work. So that's the difficulty. So that's why it says here, called a remarried woman, parapurva. So that means that there certain rights are lost. Because you just want to fit in. In other words, the woman doesn't have any facility, she's not protected, so she's just happy to be in a stable environment. That's the profit. Not the, you know, control over the whole thing. So therefore, you know, there is, you know, those boys' mother or those girls' mother, and she may come around or they may talk about her. She can't get upset. She doesn't have the rights of a first married woman where she can get upset if anybody mentions, you know, like if the husband mentions some girlfriend back in high school, then she has the right to not talk to him for 3 days, right? But if the children of that man talk about their mother, who was her husband's previous wife, she has no right to say anything. That's the, between them and their mother. Does that make sense? Yeah, so these are very normal rules that unfortunately people don't like to follow. Like that. So there is consideration like that. So it's like he has his friends. So therefore she just assists the husband to take care of the friends. She likes or doesn't like, it doesn't matter. You know, it wasn't like they grew up together and therefore generated their common friends. Now with time, maybe slowly, by her association, he finds these friends not as fun. But if it doesn't, she doesn't, it's not her business to. She can mention something, and if he's willing to, great. You know, he should be trying to make things work out. You know what I'm saying? But it's not automatic. It's not, there's no right. That's the difference.
But with the first one, the husband still has some friends
But point is now they're a couple.
Yeah.
So now whether they'll remain and be as family friends. It may be he's friends with them, you know, his own, they go out together somewhere, but she doesn't have to interact. But now if it's something developed that these are friends that come over to the house and have dinner or hang out, then that mood, she walks in and she just has to adjust with that. And if by adjusting and by how she deals, then she's able to adjust it the way she likes, great. But she has to adjust it through affection, that because people care. She doesn't have a right through discipline to adjust it, right? The first married wife may adjust it by discipline, but the second married wife can't do that. The remarried woman can't do that. You know what I'm saying? Now, if she's remarried, but the man's never been married before, then it's like they're going together, and then it'll be the same rights. But, you know, she should always be very careful like that. She shouldn't push it too far. You know what I'm saying? But if she's already walking into an already established situation, then that's the way it is, right? And so, you know, she has to adjust with everything there, and the same time as, yeah.
Is there another rule that at the jagya, or when she can't be given away, there's some of the details, the father doesn't...
When you redo the marriage, yeah, it means things that are already done before. You know, as far as you know, giving her away, you know, it gives away somebody once, right? So that part's not done. And then all the different purificatory rites, those aren't done again. Because they're already done once. The samskars are done. So only the part that's to do with the marriage. So going around seven times, exchanging garlands, sindur, tying the cloth, sindur, ludge, going around the fire seven times, and the seven steps, and that's it. Everything else is dropped. So that those parts are actually the marriage rites. Everything else is purification and other things like that, or the giving of the girl in charity. Like that. So all the other parts aren't done. Okay. But by violating her duty towards her husband, a wife is disgraced in this world after death. In this world after death, she enters the womb of a jackal and is tormented by diseases, the punishment of her sin. She who, controlling her thoughts, words, and deeds, never slights her Lord, resides after death with a husband in heaven and is called a virtuous wife. Right? So this is the definition of virtuous wife. In reward of such conduct, a female who controls her thoughts, speech, and actions gains in this life highest renown, and in the next world a place near her husband. A twice-born man versed in the sacred law shall burn a wife of equal caste, who conducts herself thus and dies before him with the sacred fires used for the Agnihotra, and with the sacrificial implements. Right? In other words, the fire from the wedding is the fire in the Brahmin's house. That's what he does every day his yajna with, and that's what is used for cooking the offerings. So if the wife dies before him, then that is used for how you say? Burning her, and also all the implements for doing the yajna and all that, that's also put into the fire. Because that's connected with that fire. Having thus, at the funeral, given the sacred fires to his wife who dies before him, he may marry again and again kindle the fires. But then it has to be completely a separate thing. It's a new fire and new implements. But the old ones go with the wife. Like that. Because he is a grihasta because of her. Right? And so when that's gone, then that... So that means that yajna and those fires and that are connected with her. Does that make sense? Conclusion of Grihastha Ashram. Living according to the preceding rules, he must never neglect the five great sacrifices. And having taken a wife, he must dwell in his own house during the second period of his life. Right? First being Brahmachari, second being Grihastha.
You're saying that she shouldn't remarry and he can remarry again? That's the reason?
It did say marry again and kindle the fire. And again kindle the fire.
Sorry.
No, there's some issues here. Again and again and again and again. Like that. Because the masculine principle is independent. So it's not that it's a distraction, because the point is he, by thinking of the wife at death, becomes a woman. She, by thinking of the husband, either goes to the same destination or becomes a man. Does that make sense? So, therefore, if, you know, there's, it doesn't really matter, because, you know, does that make sense? But for the woman, it's because she thinks of the husband, that's where she gets the benefit. Right, so she can either think of the husband, think of who's a devotee, think of the spiritual master, think of Krishna. So the husband doesn't have those options. He has to think of the spiritual master, Krishna. If he thinks of his wife, he'll take birth as a woman, even if she's a devotee. Because he's thinking of her as a woman, right? While the woman's thinking of the husband as shelter. Right? It's different. Because the mentalities are different. So... That's why the husband generally, there's some aspect of vanaprastha sannyas, right? Because then that pulls one out of these things. For the woman, it's not a matter of pulling oneself out of these things. It's just a matter of transferring it to Krishna, like that. Does that make sense? So, therefore, each has their advantage and disadvantage, where one's strong, so are the other's weak. So that's why then marriage is there, so that they can complement each other. Where one's strength is, the other one has their weakness. So if they cooperate, then it'll balance out. Does that work? Okay. Okay. So now everyone has discourse 6, right? Page 99. No?
Hasn't been printed yet.
Oh, okay. Hey, this guy's back. Okay, so then I'll read from my copy then. I think they're coming in the afternoon. Because everybody was either so focused that everything went very quickly, or so spaced out that everything went very quickly. So we ended up one class short on for the month. Okay, Discourse 6, the Vanaprastha Ashram. Topic 14, the law of hermits. So hermit means vanaprastha. A twice-born snataka who has thus lived according to the law and the order of householders may, taking a firm resolution and keeping his organs in subjection, dwell in the forest, duly observing the rules given below. When a householder sees his skin wrinkled and his hair white and the sons of his sons, then he may resort to the forest. Abandoning all food raised by cultivation and all his belongings, he may depart into the forest, either committing his wife to his sons or accompanied by her. Right? So, vanaprastha, the general thing is one is therefore living in the forest. That's why it's called vanaprastha. Vana means forest. So that's the general rule. So anybody like that living in the forest, then in these modes that are given, then that is vanaprastha. Now, within vanaprastha, there's so many categories. But those categories are according to their vow. It's not necessarily a chronological order of things, right? But it is it's just what vow works for him at the particular time. So, therefore, with wife or without wife, that's two major categories. He can go with his wife, or the wife can stay at home with the sons. It doesn't matter, because the rule is she can be with the husband or be with the sons. On the thing with Parasara, I was telling about the five reasons that the wife could marry again. Did it mention anything whether there's children or not? Or you don't remember? Because from what I heard, that was all these were considerations if there were no children. If there were children, then it wasn't considered an option. Yeah, I always remember that. It means, in other words, she's young, husband died or went away, never came back, or is, you know, whatever, becomes degraded, this kind of thing. She could marry again, but if they haven't had a child. If she has a child, then she just lives under the protection of the child. Okay. Riti, regarding a vanaprastha being accompanied by his wife, Srila Prabhupada writes the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.13.30. Saubalini, or Gandhari, daughter of King Shubala and wife of King Dhritarashtra, was ideal as a wife devoted to her husband. The Vedic civilization especially prepares chaste and devoted wives, of whom Gandhari is one amongst many mentioned in history. Because there's five major ones mentioned in history, but then, you know, being so many like that. So Gandhari is one of those. Lakshmiji, Sita Devi, was also a daughter of a great king, and she followed her husband, Lord Ramachandra, into the forest. Similarly, as a woman, Gandhari could have remained at home or at her father's house, but as a chaste and gentle lady, she followed her husband without consideration. Instructions for the renounced order of life were imparted to Dhritarashtra by Vidura, and Gandhari was by the side of her husband. But he did not ask her to follow him because he was at the time fully determined. Like a great warrior faces all kinds of dangers in the battlefield. He was no longer attracted to so-called wife or relatives, and he decided to start alone. But as a chaste lady, Gandhari decided to follow her husband till the last moment. Maharaj Dhritarashtra accepted the order of Vanaprastha, and at this stage, the wife is allowed to remain as a voluntary servitor. But in the sannyas stage, no wife can stay with her former husband. A sannyasi is considered to be a dead man civilly, and therefore the wife becomes a civil widow without connection with her former husband. Maharaj Dhritarashtra did not deny his faith a wife, and she followed her husband at her own risk. In other words, he's going to live the Vanaprastha lifestyle, so whatever that entails, so there's not, you know, more facility. You know, it's not like they're out in the forest, so it's dangerous, you know, there's lions, tigers, and bears, and all that kind of jazz. And so therefore, now he's got to go out, get a job, work, and then build a nice, like, fort out like that, in a bunker, you know, something, I don't know. No, it's just whatever's the lifestyle, then that's the thing. That's what he said, at her own risk. It means that, it just means he will, what is the natural thing that he can provide from the forest, that that's all that's available. Basically, if he's going to be, you know, proper. So the one who needs to be with the wife, that just means then that's, you could say like Vanaprastha, but it's like it's the last, you could say the final stages of Grihastha. But if it's a matter of she's there or not, that doesn't mean he's indifferent in that he doesn't care, he doesn't deal properly. It just means if she wants to come out and be with him, fine. He's happy to have her there, and they'll cooperate in Krishna consciousness. She'd rather be at home with the kids and grandkids, and that's fine also. Or if she wants to come back and forth, and that's... He doesn't... In other words, he's not dependent like that. But if she's there, then he has to deal properly. It's not that he doesn't care and doesn't... You know, that would... Or he doesn't deal properly so that she goes away. That would be improper. You know, because if he does that, then, you know, it's all about himself. So even if he's on his own, it'll all be about himself. He'll never really care about anybody else. You know, it may look good, but, you know, it's not. Brahmachari, the Vedic concept of brahmachari, because we went through the whole thing, right? Whole chapter of it. Nowhere in there do they get the idea that brahmacharis are tough. You know, tough, mean, yeah, you know, like that kind of, you know, like that. That's generally guys from Ireland in a pub. Right, you know, and they all get together, you know, like that kind of stuff. You know. That makes sense. Maybe on a ship, right? You know, they do that also. Like that, you know. That makes sense. So, it's not part of the Vedic culture, like that.
Right. Forest nowadays meaning?
Forest. Well, I mean, your ideal forest is made out of trees that are still connected to the ground with leaves. But otherwise, if it's, you know, it can also be, you know, kind of a forest made out of cement. You know, and the trees aren't exactly connected to the ground anymore, so they're... Did that work, or a little more detail? Well, you have Vrindavan. It's also Vrindavan. Or you have Vrindavan, or, you know, you have here Mayapur.
You have heard that, you know, when you retire, you
engage more in preaching, you travel more. Yeah, anything like that.
Not exactly.
It can be. The point is even there, is if you're on the edge, how much preaching you can do. You know what I'm saying? You're there. This all, it means grihasthas always want to know what they're supposed to do. And so people who have made it through, and especially if they're still together, as Vanaprasthas, generally has a tendency people would go to them and ask them things. So even just sitting in one's hut in the forest, one can do a lot of preaching. Or one can travel, whatever works. It doesn't matter.
Is that mean they're not doing so much service at the temple when they're
not preaching?
Meaning? Well, if they're in the forest and you say they're preaching, does that mean they're not so much connected to the temple?
That depends upon the arrangement. They could also be part of the temple.
Yeah,
they could move into the temple. You know, so. You know, the idea is that you're not living a grihastha life where you are expanding facilities and, you know, so many social considerations like that. I mean, social considerations are here, but it'll be understood what's the prominence. What's the prominence?
Sometimes we see a situation that actually Grihasthas, they live as vanaprasthas. Is it kind of okay?
It depends if they're both happy.
They travel and preach, and then after some time,
they're saying, are they happy?
Well, at the moment they are, and then they.
So when at the moment when they're not, then they should live as Grihasthas. You know, because they weren't technically vanaprastha. They were performing duties. They were just preachers and like that.
Yeah.
But they were just taking that aspect. But they wouldn't be considered vanaprastha. Means it's something that comes just natural to age. It says here, skin is wrinkled, hair white, and seeing the sun of his sons. So if there are no children, then, you know, like that, then they weren't grihasthas. You know what I'm saying? Unless both of them didn't want children, and it remains that way. But if somebody decides they want children, they're grihasthas, and they have children. You know? Otherwise, what's the meaning? Yeah.
Is there a ceremony between a grihastha ashram and a vanaprastha ashram?
No. It's just called standing up and walking.
There is a... No, you can say not even advice from senior person.
Advice means?
Advice means to take vanaprastha with the permission of somebody senior.
I mean, naturally one would run it by the spiritual master of those devotees that you consider important in your life. Yeah. Because you have to see that you are, you know, establishing yourself as a vanaprastha. So it should be seen. Yeah. Okay. Taking with him the sacred fire and the implements required for domestic sacrifices, he may go forth from the village into the forest and reside there, duly controlling his senses. Right. So that's also then another form of vanaprastha. Is that within that he can take the sacrificial implements with him or not, right? But since the fire in that is generally connected with the wife, that would generally mean the wife has gone with him. So one who the wife doesn't go with him generally wouldn't take the sacrificial implements. They would stay in the house. Let him wear a skin or a tattered garment. Let him bathe in the evening and in the morning. Let him always wear his hair in braids. The hair on his body, his beard, and his nails being unclipped.
What's the problem with the nails?
No problem with the nails.
No, why not clip?
Then why not clip everything?
Yeah.
This is vanaprastha. This is you're in a active way removing yourself from all those things that before were so important. So, I mean, at least for the ladies, it shouldn't be a problem, right? So, if the woman goes to the forest, then you know, it's not a problem because they like to grow long nails.
Probably in the forest.
Like you said, he takes the sacred fire.
I guess he would take his japa beads with him. Yeah, basically.
And his bhagavatam.
And his bhagavatam, yes. Well, that's coming up.
Also.
Hmm?
The whole set.
The whole set, yeah. Okay.
It's Kindle.
It's Kindle. Okay,
it's
yeah. Okay, the sacred fire, yeah. Let him give alms according to his ability. Right? So he'll get things, but he should also be giving in charity to others. Let him honor those who come to his hermitage with alms consisting of water, roots, and fruit. Let him be always industrious in privately reciting the Veda. Right? Therefore, the importance of the Kindle. Right? Let him be patient of hardships, friendly towards all, of collected mind, ever liberal and never a receiver of gifts, and compassionate towards all living creatures. Now, his Dvanaprastha should not ask anything for those who visit. If someone gives him something, that's another thing. As a Brahmin, then he can accept. But he never asks for anything. Right, so in other words, you see it's a serious position that one is not in any way trying to increase the material situation. You know, just maintaining. Alternatively, Yajnavalkya states, let him not be enraged with him who pierces him with the thorn, nor pleased with him who pastes him with sandal, but he should be impartial towards both of them. So he's not looking for what's the nice situation, what's not the nice situation. Grihastha does that. You know, the nicest situation he arranges. Not nice, he tries to get rid of. Right? So he tries to organize it as life. It's, you know, according to the Shastra, it's as pleasant and proper as possible. The Vanaprastha doesn't worry about that. He just, you know, he has the simple thing, keeps it clean, and that's it. He doesn't worry about anything. Because Grihastha might have, you know, you have your friends, your relatives, someone's insulted one of your family members, so therefore you don't talk with that person, and this one doesn't talk with that one, and so many things. So all that is done as a Grihastha. Otherwise, how do you maintain the relationships? Right? But as a Vanaprastha, you don't do that. All living entities you're friendly towards. So there's no more social considerations like that. So as a Vanaprastha, the person who was your enemy before, now he just becomes another person you're friendly with. Doesn't mean you have to be intimate. It just means you deal, you're equal in your dealings. Okay. Vriti, in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 11.18.8, it is said, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has given detailed explanation of the four rituals mentioned here. Okay, Agnihotra with three sacred fires. Offer the Nakshatreshti, the Agrayana, and the Chaturmasya. Okay, the Turiyana and likewise the Dakshinayana, due order. Four rituals. Name the Agnihotra, Darsha, Purnamasya, and Chaturmasya. The conclusion is that everyone should simply chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And avoid the difficult entanglement of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. If one neither chants the Hare Krishna nor performs such rituals, one certainly becomes a Pashandi, an atheistic fool. So either you have to be chanting your japa or doing these rituals, because that's the prescribed rule. Right? So because japa is the highest of all sacrifice, and of japa then chanting Hare Krishna is the best, then that will replace. It's not that we're just saying it. It actually, the Shastra gives those aspects. Eating habits. Let him eat vegetables that grow on dry land or in water, flowers, roots, and fruits, the productions of pure trees, and oils extracted from forest fruits. Let him avoid honey, flesh, and mushrooms growing on the ground. Right, so those ones that must create passion. So mushrooms must create passion. Because honey creates heat in the body. Vriti, in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 11.18.2, we find the following. According to a passage from Manasamhita quoted by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the word medhyai, or pure, indicates that while residing in the forest, a sage may not accept honey-based liquors, animal flesh, fungus, mushrooms, horseradish, or any hallucinogen or intoxicating herbs, even those taken as so-called medicine. So, sorry, no horseradish. Just because they create so much more passion. So the idea is the Vanaprastha is being very careful.
You mentioned the oil-bearing fruits. You're not going to go and start extracting oil, you're just going to eat the fruits?
That, I'm not sure. It says oil is extracted from forest fruits, so there must be some way to do that. You know, like coconuts, you know, or stuff like that. You know, so there's... Because there's people, you know, live the forest life, so it's not, you know, it's not like they all have bones in their noses and like that. But it's just that, in other words, one's living with what comes easily, what is pure, and what doesn't generate passion. Right, so that's the common point about here. Pure meaning that it doesn't generate passion or ignorance, right? So honey-based liquors, so the honey will create passion, the liquor will create ignorance, animal flesh ignorance, fungus, mushrooms ignorance, horseradish passion, hallucinogen or intoxicating herbs and ignorance. Right, you know, so that's the common principle.
Opium, is that
an intoxicating? Yeah, anything, hallucinogenic or intoxicating herbs. So it's an intoxicating herb.
Just I met one from Copa because I thought she said that she didn't want to go to hospital if she got sick or anything like that. She thought that she probably still in a lot of pain when she was living in the body, but she was thinking she would just take opium.
The point is up to the point that it gets rid of the pain, then it's medicine. When it goes beyond the pain, then it becomes intoxication. Just like if you have a headache and you take an aspirin, it's medicine because all it does is bring it to neutral. But if you don't have a headache and you take aspirin, then it will cause other problems. You understand? So that's the whole point. Someone has a lot of pain, they can take morphine. It's not it doesn't make them intoxicated, it just gets rid of the pain. So maybe a little sleepy, I think. You know what I'm saying? So it's something you can do like that. But you have to be very careful because you don't want to be unconscious. Right? Because otherwise then you have both the element of whatever pain is to be left from that and not thinking of Krishna and then coming back to receive the balance of that pain.
Is that pain burning up sinful attractivity?
Yeah, of course.
So if you can handle it, you just...
It means you deal with what works, because you also have to be able to remember the Lord and be able to function. So that's what... It means, let's say you get a disease. You're supposed to have that disease for a certain amount of time. If you take medicine, it stops that, so it'll come back later. But the point is one deals with it in such a way that one can continue the service, because the service is more important than burning up these reactions. So if it's a matter of you're going to dress the deities or sit at home with a headache because you want to burn off the karma, better you're dressing the deities. You get a lot more benefit. So that's why then we'll take the medicines. But generally Ayurveda mentions after a certain age, then you don't bother so much with the medicines and just burn things off, because you don't have those responsibilities and duties anymore. So therefore one is more careful with those. But the point is to be more Krishna conscious. That's the point. Like, I'm not even sure if Balabhadra Prabhu's wife was taking medicines at the end. Yeah, I'm not sure. It mentions in that little book. He wrote a little book.
Simple for the Simple.
Yes, Simple for the Simple. But I don't know if she was taking the medicines. Scottish. Don't want to insult them.
There is a definite moment when someone with pain, they take a certain amount of an opiate to get rid of the pain, but if someone with no pain took that same amount,
yeah,
they'd be so intoxicated.
Yeah, of course. You know, so that's the whole point, is that it's balanced. It's just like ghee and chili go together. So if you put more ghee, you put more chili. Less ghee, less chili. Right? So when you say something is hot, that's because the chili is more than the amount of ghee. It's not that chili makes things hot. It depends on the ghee. Does that make sense?
Is there a ratio for it?
Balanced. That was Bhakti Chatri. It would have been not enough chili. The ghee would have been enough. It's Bhakti Chatri. You never saw Bhakti Chatri? You take a pot. Let's say 2 kilos of potatoes, right? You cut them up big pieces, put them in the pot. Then you put in probably 300 and 400 grams of ghee. Right? If you want to be more true to the recipe, mustard oil. Okay? Then you're going to probably put in about 8 to 10 red chilies, big ones. And then you're going to put in probably, 100 grams of turmeric. And then you're going to fill it up with water till the water just covers the potatoes. And salt, right? The normal amount of salt. Just like the potatoes and salt are normal, everything else is not. Then you put it on the fire. You don't stir it. I mean, you can mix it up before you start. You put it on the fire and don't stir it. It'll boil until the water goes out. And then the oil that's in there, and this turmeric that'll all be stuck on the bottom, they'll start to cook together. And so the oil will slowly fry the turmeric until the point where the turmeric actually burns. So you should have, ideally, 1.5 to 2 millimeters of actually burnt. The bottom should be burnt. It means charcoal, black. Right? Then you take it off.
Powdered turmeric?
Powdered turmeric. It can be paste is better. But if you throw in whole turmeric root, it won't. Because the point is that the turmeric and the oil mix on the bottom and burn. So that's called baki chachuri. So now if you cook that without the chilies, then you'll kill yourself. But if you put the chilies, it's not heavy at all. So that's the point. You put you can put a liter of ghee in there, you've got to put in that much chili. So that's the point, is devotees will say, oh, too much ghee is too rich, is too... No, it's because there's not enough chili. So Westerners don't like to use chili. Therefore, they can't actually cook with anything rich. So it's not because ghee is a problem, it's because they don't know how to cook. That's all. I will end the explanation at that point before we turn into another one the other day. Yes?
If you have something with too much chili and burning the mouth, taking some ghee doesn't neutralize it.
Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to. I mean, I've heard of different things, but nothing comes to mind because I was always very careful about that, so I never had the problem. So, but there are... There are things. Some say bananas. I've heard different things. Some say yogurt.
Buttermilk.
Like that. But basically, you just kind of have to wait till it goes away. But these other things can help. Okay. He may eat either what has been cooked with fire or what has been ripened by time. In other words, it's cooked by fire, you cook it, or you just let it ripen, and just eat it like that. He might either use a stone for grinding, or his teeth may be his mortar.
Right? He still has one.
We're talking about Vedic people. They have their teeth. Right? In other words, he may take the wheat grains, soak them in water, and then just, eat them like that. He just grinds them up with his own teeth. So, they've been ripened by time, and then he uses his teeth as a mortar. Like that. Or you could cook them. Having collected food according to his ability, he might either eat at night only, or in the daytime only, or at every fourth mealtime, or at every eighth. Did you catch it, those last 2 men? No. Okay. So in other words, he's eating once a day. So either at noontime he can eat, or at night, whichever works better for him. Right, so generally, so like Pitta constitutionally might eat at night. It's cooler and everything. Vata would eat in the middle of the day. Right? Standard being 2 meals a day, it follows that one who eats every fourth meal would be eating every other day. He eats 1 meal every other day. And one who eats at every eighth meal would eat only every fourth day. Getting serious here. I've seen Sahotramars do every other day. Once a day, every other day. He'd go out and beg. And whatever you collect, you come back, give half to me, and eat the other half every other day. So, it is possible. He's the only one I've ever seen do that. He also chants 64 rounds, right? Because if you're not eating, then there's plenty of time, right? Or he may live according to the rule of the lunar penance, Chandrayana. daily diminishing the quantity of food in the bright half of the moon and increasing it in the dark half. Or he may eat on the last days of each fortnight, once a day only, boiled barley and gruel. So Chandrayana means you start with, it works on, you have the 15 phases of the moon, right? So new moon means no food, right? The first day, Pratipat, means one mouth of food. Second means two mouths. Third, like up to 15 mouths. So Purnima is 15 mouthfuls of food. And then it goes back down the other way. Or you can start at, well, here he started, daily diminished quantity in the bright. Yeah, okay. So he can either start with the full moon, go from 15 down to 0 back to 15, or start at 0, go up to 15 down to there. Right? Or one can do it is, then instead of doing that, just every day 8 mouthfuls of food. Right? That's the other way of doing it.
This is Chandrayana?
That's Chandrayana. That's what he's saying here. Chandrayana. Like that. Or he may eat on the last days of each fortnight, once a day only, boiled barley gruel. You know, so he can do that. Fast the rest of the time, and then so every 2 weeks he eats. Or he may constantly subsist on flowers, roots, and fruits alone. Right? It means, you know, nothing cooked, just no grains, which may have ripened by time and have fallen spontaneously, following the rule of the Institutes of Vaikanas. So Vaikanas then is also so many rules. There's 10 different rules, or 10 different vratas for vanaprasthas. So Vaikanas is a very standard, like that. Right? Looks interesting. Okay.
There was a statement that I read up that I didn't include about the amount to be increasing every day and the size of the NZ.
Yeah. Well, that means one mouthful. Yeah. So it's either be, you know, because otherwise someone might, you know.
Hostage.
Yeah, so that way then it gives something so that you can get an idea, you know, what you're talking about. Okay, so then we'll continue with his austerities in the evening. Right? Which we'll we'll finish that. We'll get, I don't know, we may get through this chapter. No, that was just his living in food. Now we get into his austerities. I know, it looks like the sannyasa. It's quite a bit, yeah. Because there's all the philosophies there.
It should be okay to finish today anyway. Monday we should have the
next. Yeah, better. Because we have 3 classes a day, so moving through. You know, on Monday. From Tuesday, then it's again back to just one a day.
Tuesday,
gentlemen. Yeah, four to five. I mean, we'll try it. If it doesn't work out, then that's another thing. But we'll try that. That's the idea. You know, so that means from Tuesday through to the next week. So in other words, another 7 classes. Then we just have the 4 to 5 classes, and we'll continue with it. Yeah. So we should be. I would expect, yeah, we should probably finish on Monday all this. So then we beat into Kshatriya Dharma from Tuesday.
Yes.
Yeah, we might get through one chapter, or part of the next. I would think. Yes, maybe. Going a little quicker, not too much riots or dazed looks. We got a little bit before you came. Forget what we were talking about. It was something we were saying, and everyone's just sitting there kind of going. I don't remember what the point was, but it was some decent point. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai.